Our second speaker today is Steve Oates. Steve is the Assistant Director of the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. The Institute is an applied research group of the Wisconsin State Legislature, much like our legislative service agencies here in Wisconsin. He has 31 years of experience conducting cost-benefit analysis. He's authored or co-authored 46 publications, many of them on evaluating the costs and benefits of programs and policies to reduce crime. I think one of the most remarkable things about Mr. Oates' work, it's so incredibly policy relevant. Perhaps because he's frequently responding to requests of legislators for an analysis of issues that they're actually debating or discussing in the legislature in Washington State. As examples of the relevance of his work, one of his cost benefits on corrections programs was downloaded off the web 32,000 times. And the one he's discussing today has been downloaded 9,000 times in just the 1 year that it's been posted. And we had a planning meeting with experts on corrections, and they said you have to get Steve Oates to come. He's presented his work to 10 state legislatures, 10 to 15 executive agencies, 4 meetings of the National Conference of State Legislators, 1 meeting of the National Governors Association, 3 events of the National Association of Sentencing Commissions. And when I asked Mr. Oates about something personal that I might share with you today, he said he had one deviance. And we mentioned the word deviance. Of course, my ears kind of perked up. I thought, this is perfect for a seminar on corrections. He said he has a deviant urge that he has great difficulty keeping under control. He loves to play tennis. And he said this addiction is so strong, so over the top, that if someone had asked him to play tennis at the very time when this talk was scheduled, it would have been a really tough choice. But he is here. He's got a little bit of a scratchy voice today, so we're hoping his voice will hold up. And Mr. Oates, it's time for you to take center court here at the Family Impact Seminars. Thank you for coming. Sure. Now, if you have trouble hearing, it's going to be harder for Steve to project because of his cold. If you have trouble, let us know. We'll sit him down at a mic so he can speak right into it. Yep. So be sure to just raise your hand if you're not hearing. Yep.
Or if you don't like anything I say, you can do the same thing. thanks very much for having me here today. It's now about 7 o'clock on the West Coast time, so you know my brain is just starting to work now a little bit here. I'm glad I wasn't the first speaker. But it's wonderful to be here in Wisconsin. I'm getting over a cold, and that's my voice may or may not make it throughout the whole talk today. So I'm going to try to be brief in our remarks here today. I'm an economist, and the title of this talk is "How's Your Portfolio Doing?" Which you might think, well, what am I coming here to talk about? How your retirement assets are working? You know, are you saving enough? Do you have enough in stocks and bonds? Do you have too much in stocks and bonds? Not enough in cash, real estate, something like that. And in previous life, I did part of that. I did work in that area as well. But what we've done for our state legislature, and I'll talk about that in a moment, is take the same exact approach that if I were working for Merrill Lynch advising you about how your portfolio was working to accomplish an objective like being able to retire, we've taken that same approach in our analysis for our state legislature on how is our portfolio of crime-fighting resources, the stuff that I as a taxpayer and all other Washingtonians pay for, how is that portfolio doing in fighting crime and keeping our costs down to a minimum and trying to keep crime rates down? So we're going to take that same kind of a thing that I would if I were working for Merrill Lynch, except we're going to apply it to this area of criminal justice. And when we did that, we found out some very interesting things, I think, and we'll share that with you. And then how our legislature implemented some of those findings in the 2007 session, they got out on time. Just a little bit. All right. The institute that I work for is a creature of the legislature, the Washington legislature. We were created back in 1983, so we're about ready to celebrate our 25th anniversary as well. And we have a board of directors also primarily legislatively based, although the governor appoints a few members of our board as well. And all of the work that we do, every bit of it, comes to us from a legislative assignment. So the one I'm going to talk about today is something that was assigned to us in a piece of legislation in 2005, and the report entered that way. We don't chase federal dollars or do independent research. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of the legislature. Here's our state capital, Olympia, on one of the many, 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 many sunny days that we have in Olympia. And we're looking north there. There's the Capitol. There's the Olympic National Park, and Seattle's around the corner. The Institute for Public Policy, where I work, is very close to the Capitol. And by golly, my house is right there. I've got a low carbon footprint. I just walk to work and so on. And I mention all this because it's kind of fun. But mostly, you know, we work for a state capitol, and the governor's mansion is right there on the left-hand side of the Capitol building, and the Supreme Court building on the judiciary side is right behind the Capitol there. So all three branches of government are there, and those three branches of government, along with local governments that are scattered out across the state, determine what kind of criminal justice system we have in our state. The federal government intervenes once in a while through a court case, perhaps. Sometimes the federal government does otherwise, but primarily what kind of criminal justice system Washington wants to have or Wisconsin wants to have is a function of what happens in the Capitol, like this building or the one we have there. We have two of the 48 states listed up there. So it's important to think about that in terms of the choices that are made and why we make those choices to have certain kinds of policies and not others. Here's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about what works, the work we've done on that, what works to reduce crime, what's economic. That's the second question. And then I'll talk about the results of the 2006 study we did for our legislature. And then importantly, I think what our 2007 legislature did, and they took some major steps, we used this results of this study and some other information, and substantially changed that portfolio that I'll be talking about here. Here's the take-home message up front. This is what you'd expect an economist to say something like this. Think about the magic of compound interest. When you were a youngster, probably one of your parents, maybe your mother, said to you, you know, if you just save a little bit over time, you'll get a little bit of interest each year, and pretty soon you're going to be well off by the time you get to be an adult. And it turns out that advice, when we look at the criminal justice system, what works and what doesn't, we have to keep that same philosophy in order to make this system work. We have to think about those small gains that you can make year after year in the criminal justice system and how they pay off over time. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But think about that kind of compound interest concept as we talk about some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about tomorrow, this morning. I want to give a little bit of background first before we get into the results of our study. And this is going to be, we're going to take a look at adult prison incarceration rates. How many people do we have per 1,000 adults? In this case, it's in the 18 to 49-year-old age group. How many people do we have locked up in prison on any given day? So it's sort of, let's take a look. Numbers for the United States as a whole. Oh, interesting colors. There you can see the United States rate. For decades, we had a pretty consistent rate of incarceration. We incarcerated about two people per 1,000 adults back in 1930, and we were still at about two people per 1,000 adults in 1975 or so. That was before the Depression and then after the Depression, before World War II and after World War II, before Elvis Presley and after Elvis Presley. Before the internet. But we had consistently throughout the United States, and I'll put Washington's numbers up there too. I don't have Wisconsin's.
They're in the report, though.
They're in the report, Karen tells me. We also had a very similar rate, about two people per 1,000 in Washingtonians, as around on the average across the country, locked up per 1,000 adults for decades. And then we began as a society, other states more so than Washington, to increase the use of incarceration. Substantially. In the United States, we've quintupled it. In Washington, we've tripled it. I could talk a little bit, but not today, about why Washington's rate is probably lower than the national rate, why we've grown more slowly than the average. I think it's an interesting economic story, but there are reasons maybe we can talk about that later in the morning. But in any case, both Washington and the average state has increased the use of incarceration in the adult system substantially over this time period. That's important to think about as we go forward. Also important to think about in light of what we're going to talk about, how Washington has changed its portfolio based on what works. That a year ago in December, that was the official forecast for the state of Washington. That is, given the sentencing laws that had already been passed by the legislature in Washington And we're a determinate sentencing, kind of structured sentencing sort of state. So the legislature calls the tunes on how many people in our state, how many people are going to go to prison or not. The legislature, way back in the 1980s, took a lot of that authority away from the judicial branch of government, invested it in the legislative branch of government. So the legislature sets the sentencing grid in our state. And based upon all the laws that had been passed in the 2004, 5, and 6 session, that's what the forecast was. We were going to have a continued increase in the rate of incarceration in the state of Washington. And that's going to, anticipating the need to build several new prisons as a result of that. We'll see that in a minute. Let's do one more piece of background. We'll take a look at big picture stuff here, crime rates and taxpayer costs. And we'll do some more numbers. Interesting. okay. We'll look at 1980. You never know about PowerPoint. You know, I come from the state of Bill Gates is in my state, and I wonder what he would think about the way PowerPoint's working here in Wisconsin. I don't know. It's doing some odd things. By the way, I can't leave Washington State unless Bill Gates approves these PowerPoint slides. So this comes straight from Bill. So we're going to look from 1980 to 2005, and actually I could put 2006, and how a couple of big picture things have changed since that time. Here's the good news. The good news is that crime rates are down in the state of Washington. In fact, crime rates are today are about 26, or actually I have the 2006 data now, are about 28% lower than they were in 1980. What that means is if you come to visit Seattle this year, next summer, you got about a 0.25% chance less of being a victim of a serious felony crime than had you visited back in 1980. So that's the good news. And probably the data are similar for Wisconsin. They're similar around the country. They go up and down a little bit. Robbery went up last year in 2006. All the other crime categories went down. Overall crime went down in 2006 as well. Here, that's the good news. Economists always like to do good news and then bad news. Here's the bad news. The bad news is that the amount of money that Washingtonians are spending on the criminal justice system, for all parts of the criminal justice system, have almost doubled in real terms since 1980. What I did here is I added up all the money that we spend as taxpayers on police, on local courts, local adult courts, local juvenile courts, the criminal parts of those courts, the criminal parts of the prosecutor's office, the criminal parts of the public defender's offices, local adult juvenile corrections, state adult and juvenile corrections, all those dollars, divide by the number of households, so that you get kind of like a property tax thing there, and take inflation out of it. If you do that, what I found in Washington is that in 1980, in today's dollars, we spent about $589 per household, and today we're spending over $1,100 per household. So we've doubled the amount of money that we take from the average taxpayer, and in part, the reason that crime rates are down, part of the reason that crime rates are down, is that those dollars haven't been wasted entirely, as we'll see. They could have been spent better, but part of the reason that crime rates are down is that we're spending more money on the system. We're spending more money to incarcerate people. And if you spend more money to incarcerate people, the crime rate will go down. If you just raise your incarceration rate permanently, the crime rate will go down. So now there are other reasons why the crime rates have gone down too. A lot of baby boomers, such as I am, have gray hair, and whereas Larry noted, I'm much less likely to be a criminal now than I was when I was 17 years old. And so as the baby boomer and the general age of the population in our state has increased, the crime rates have gone down. And there are other reasons why crime rates have gone down, too. When we model all that, there still is a causal effect, we think, that spending more money on the criminal justice system is one way to lower crime rates. The question that we want to know is, if Karen was to invite me back for the Family Impact Seminar in, let's say, 2018 or so, what's going to happen to those two lines? What Washingtonians would like to see is that the crime rates wouldn't go back up, that in fact they might go down more, that'd be good. But we have some choices, and this is what we found when we did our work. We have some choices in terms of that portfolio. There are some portfolios that we can put together that will achieve lower crime rates at lower cost, and there are other portfolios that will achieve lower crime rates at higher cost. So that seems like a no-brainer. You kind of want the one that gets your lower crime rates at lower costs, and that's what our study is all about, is trying to identify those things that can accomplish that task. Here's what our legislature wrote. This is the actual language out of a bill from the 2005 legislative session. He actually was in the capital budget bill of that legislative session. The legislature had just approved another prison to be built. And when it did that, it said, let's have the Institute study options to stabilize future prison populations and study the net short-run, long-term to state and local governments of implementing evidence-based, that's my underlining there, treatment and prevention programs, juvenile correction programs, adult correction programs. That is, let's break down those silos. Let's think about all the things that we could do that affect crime, not just about adult corrections. Let's think about all the things that we could do. Take a look at some sentencing alternatives, and then project the total impacts of those portfolios on the state for the state of Washington. Now, that's the report that we published. It's up on their webpage if you care, and I think maybe some of it was reprinted in your things there. When we did that, we kind of lumped together all the options that can be pulled from Olympia, actually a couple from that can be pulled from Olympia, into three categories: prisons and jails, prisons in the case of the state system, local government in the case of jails, police and programs. One thing we know about that is that all three of those things cost money. We know prisons cost money, we know police cost money, and the programs that we're talking about, those drug courts, cost money. There's no such thing as a free lunch, every economist will remind you. And that we also know, we'll talk about this in a second, is that all three of those things, prisons, police, and programs, can be effective or ineffective at reducing crime. There's evidence on different kinds of ways you can use prison that are effective and some ways that aren't so effective. Same way with police and same way with some of the programs we're talking. So what you really need to do is take this portfolio approach. That is, we got to think about what mix of those programs, of those three kinds of resources, crime-fighting resources, can you put together that are going to lower costs and keep crime rates down? And that's what we did. Well, I'll talk about today about, well, actually, I won't talk this morning about prisons. I don't have time to talk about that research. I like to talk about that, but I don't have time. We'll talk about the programs and the portfolio that we put together. Here's what we did in the study. We did it in three steps. We said, first, what work, before you even think about economics or about the portfolio, we just need to know, is there any evidence that anything works in the correctional or juvenile justice system or prevention system to reduce crime? There may be no evidence. If there's no evidence that anything works, then we're in trouble. What we did is we found 571 rigorous evaluations that have been done somewhere in the United States. And we wanted it to be a rigorous evaluation with a comparison group, not a bad evaluation that just came to the conclusion that this thing works because we looked at it and we thought it felt good or something like that, but actually a rigorous scientific evaluation with a comparison group of the real world programs, not programs that are run in the University of Wisconsin with graduate students. We want to know about programs that are on the street, and we didn't care whether they were in the adult correction system, the juvenile correction system, or in prevention system. We want to know what works, what's been shown to work scientifically to reduce crime. And so we found 500, we read thousands more evaluations, we found 571 evaluations that we think form the research base around which we could draw some conclusions. We then asked the economic question after we did the first step. We wanted to know, okay, great, everything does cost money, so what's that worth to us? If a drug court can reduce crime, what's it worth to us? If prison can reduce crime, what's that worth to us in terms of the amount of crime avoided, and how much do each of those resources cost? So we did a cost-benefit analysis as the second step, and that was that. And then the third one, we did the Merrill Lynch thing here. We said, okay, where do we spend all of our money now in the state of Washington? On what kind of resources? And what's the potential market for those resources as we look out in the years ahead? How many juveniles do we have coming through the system? How many adults do we have in the system right now? How many of those are currently being served with any of the programs we currently do use that make any sense economically? And then we put together three portfolios for our legislature to consider and presented that in this report that came out a year ago this month. Sort of a current level, which is a legislative talk for budget. If we just keep doing what we're doing now, current level, where will Washington be? And then we looked at a moderate and an aggressive portfolio increase. Here's our list. I'm going to go through a couple of these. It's a Consumer Reports kind of list. You know, it's a list of what works, what doesn't in the adult system, the juvenile system, and the prevention system. Some things we don't know so much about. It's a ranked, just like Consumer Reports ranks lawnmowers, we're ranking programs here. And it's from this list, I'll talk about a couple of these programs now, but it's from this list that we then stacked up what we're doing in the state of Washington and what our portfolio could look like if we adopted a different strategy. So let me just, I just pulled out a couple of those programs here. We're going to look at some adult offender programs, some juvenile offender programs, and a couple of prevention programs, just as an example.
And the list is on page 16.
The list is on page 16 in your report. And so let's take a look at just what these numbers are. Why focus on juvenile offenders if we're thinking about adult prisons? This is where we got to start breaking down those silos that we have problems with. And, you know, in our legislature, maybe in Wisconsin's legislature, we have adult corrections committees and we have juvenile corrections committees and we have another committee that handles primary prevention programs. The fiscal committees tend to pull all that stuff together. So we got to break down those silos, not only in the executive agencies, but also in the legislative branch of government, in order to put together a portfolio, I think, that makes sense. Here's what we found. We looked at all the adults in Washington's prisons today in the state of Washington. We found out about 70, almost three-quarters of them, had been in the Washington state juvenile justice system previously. So if we'd been able to do something with even a portion of those kids to get them off of a life of crime, we would have had some possibility of reducing what we now have in our adult correction system. And as we'll see in a minute, some of the very best programs look like they're juvenile justice programs. So if you couple that with that finding, you can start to see the impact that you might have on your adult needing to build prisons. Let's take a look at adult drug courts, not juvenile drug courts here, but adult drug courts. What we did, here's what we found. Let's talk about those three numbers. We found 57 studies. This is the thing that's been most rigorously evaluated across the country at this point. 57 studies of adult drug courts. Comparison group studies. There were lots more studies of adult drug courts that we threw out because they didn't have valid comparison groups. But we had found 57 studies. On average, those 57 studies yielded about an 8% reduction in recidivism rates. 8%. So that's the same thing. If let's just say without a drug court, this is numbers we think apply to Washington. Without a drug court, the typical offender who would otherwise go into drug court would have about a 58% chance of being reconvicted for a new felony or misdemeanor after a 13-year period without drug court. And that would drop, an 8% drop is going to drop that down to 54%. So remember what I said earlier about compound interest? That doesn't seem like a very big reduction. You'd loved it if drug courts reduced the rate of reoffending by 80%, not 8%. Your heart says, gee, I wish it could be a silver bullet and 80%. But your head says those studies tell you that you're only going to get an 8% reduction. And the question is that 8% reduction worth it if you do it year after year? And just like compound interest of earning that kind of return in the stock market, what we found out is that it is worth it for the state of Washington to get that 8% a year. We then wanted to know what the economic effect was. Remember, our method was to first find out what works and what doesn't, and then to do an economic analysis. And what we found out is that drug courts can produce, adult drug courts at reducing 8% a year, can reduce recidivism rates by 8%, and that's worth about, on net, about $4,700 to the average Washingtonian. We think that drug courts cost more than regular court processing, about $4,300 more to pay for all the processing, the court time, to pay for the treatment time, the extra time for the prosecutor and the judge. But that 8% reduction recidivism generates about $9,100 in benefits to Washingtonians, in part as taxpayers, because there'll be fewer crimes in the future, and that'll mean we get to spend less money on police and so on. And in part because there'll be fewer crimes, there'll be fewer crime victims, and that's also worth something that we quantify in this study. So the net economic advantage is pretty good. It's about $1.80 benefit per dollar of cost for drug courts, which on Wall Street right now, that'd be a pretty good rate of return. You'd be a star on Wall Street. So that's part of it. That's a program that looks good to us. Here's some more. I'm not going to go through them. We can talk about some of these later if the crick don't rise in my voice. Some things work, some things don't. Intensive supervision, where all you're doing is counting contacts, ISP, intensive supervision, probation, or parole, depending on what you call it, where it's primarily surveillance. You have the person just come into the office more often. Found 23 studies of that have been done around the country, no effect on the recidivism rates. So if you're spending money on that program, you might be doing it for other reasons, but reducing crime is not going to give you, you're not going to reduce crime rates. If you couple that intensive supervision, spend some more money, and also get some drug treatment, and some of those, we found 11 studies that show a pretty good rate of return. So it's an indication that intensive supervision coupled with some kind of treatment of the reason that the person was an offender, they actually can probably pay off handsomely. And that's probably part of the reason why drug courts look as good as they do as well, because it's intensive supervision with treatment. Juvenile offender programs also look very attractive to us. In fact, if you look at some of those percentage reductions, again, they're not 80% returns, but they're substantially above the adult offender returns, and those are looking awfully attractive to us. Economically, those percentage reductions generate a lot of benefits. Why is that? Because, well, as Larry showed, when you're 16, 17, 18 years old into your early adulthood, you're going to be doing a lot of most of your crime. So if you can find things that work during those age groups, you're going to be avoiding a lot of crime. And that's why economically, the dollars that you spend on some of those programs are some of the most attractive expenditures that are going to fit into the portfolio and affect the need to build prisons the most in the future. A couple of prevention programs, preschool programs, I think, for low-income kids, we found 8 studies that have looked at the long-term crime impacts of effective preschool programs, and that looks pretty good to us just as a crime-fighting resource alone. We've also done an economic analysis on education outcomes and child welfare outcomes, and that you get some additional benefits there. These are just the crime ones. And then some home visiting programs. Nurse Family Partnership is one that's talked about a lot across the country. It's in about 7 of the counties in the state of Washington. The legislature just upped the funding of that program significantly. Very attractive rate of return on that program for crime and non-crime outcomes as well, I might add. So here we are, kind of. We're going to go into the portfolio mode now. We've done our list of things that work. We've done our economic analysis, and now we wanted to put some portfolios for our legislature on where we could be in the future if we had changed our mix of programs. Here's what we were looking at. The state of Washington currently owns or will soon be finishing 18,000 beds for the adult correction system. We also rent some beds from local jails there to handle parole violators in the state of Washington. So the shaded areas are a supply of prison beds or jail beds for adult felony offenders in the state of Washington. And here's that December 2006 forecast that I mentioned a minute ago. So a year ago, going into the 2007 session, we were looking at a 2 prison shortfall by 2020. And growing to about a 3 prison shortfall by 2030. And really what the study was that the legislature asked us to do is, can we cost effectively move that red line down and keep crime rates down and also reduce costs? And that's what we did. So I'm not going to go through all these statistics here. These are Merrill Lynch kind of statistics here, where we're looking at rate of return on investment and all that kind of stuff, all that mumbo jumbo. But we're going to be looking at current level, moderate level, and an aggressive level portfolios, and what would happen to Washington, what we forecast would happen to Washington if we changed our portfolio a bit. Here's what we did. If we just keep doing what we're doing now, we think that the current level forecast will come down a little bit more, and that's because in the last couple of years the legislature has funded a bunch of programs that we don't think have been fully picked up in the forecast. You can't see it on that slide. On a couple other ones, you can see that just doing what we're doing now, of those of programs that we think are evidence-based in the state of Washington, they're earning taxpayers a rate of return on investment about 24% annual rate of return on investment. That is, crime rates are going to continue to go down from a rate of 52 crimes down to 48 and save taxpayers about $1 billion net if we just keep doing what we're doing now. So we didn't want to zero out those programs that are already working. We wanted to keep those in the portfolio. But here's what happened when we did in a moderate portfolio. The need for prison beds drops. And when we did an aggressive portfolio, we can virtually eliminate the need to build new prison beds given current sentencing laws. We can't anticipate what future legislatures will do to sentencing laws, but we can anticipate, given current laws, what would happen. And what the interesting thing I think to note here is that under all three portfolios, which some of those slides show, some of them don't, the crime rate is going to go down. So if we go on the high, if we go on the current level portfolio and build two or three new prisons, the crime rate's going to go down. We're going to raise that incarceration rate. The crime rate's going to go down if you do that. If for every 10% or so that we raise the incarceration rate on average, crime rate's going to go down somewhere around 3%. Depends on what kind of offenders you're raising it for. So crime rates are going to go down. If we do the option that has more of those programs in lieu of building the prison, crime rate's also going to go down about the same level. Those numbers, 48, 49, are the same numbers virtually. So in terms of future crime rates, these portfolios will have the same effect on crime. The real difference is right there. It's on the cost side. These programs that cost a lot less than building the prison cells. So if we can avoid building one or two of those new prisons out there, we're going to save taxpayers a net $1 to $2.4 billion. Now what our legislature did in this session is that, you can't see that too well with that color there, but the legislature just got passed a budget and it changed the portfolio, spent more money on prevention programs, on juvenile programs, and on adult programs, and it adopted in 2007, something like around a moderate level portfolio. So we officially, just in June and in this week, took off the books, officially for the state forecast, not we, but the state forecasting agency that does this stuff, one of those new prisons that we were otherwise planning to build. So the state has placed a bet. It's made its bet. It said, we're gonna fund these programs, we expect them to work, and we're gonna take one new prison off the drawing boards. Now it's up to Washington to try to deliver that. I'm going to talk about these things later. I'm running out of time here. This is next to the last slide. But there are a couple of things here that are necessary to pull these things off. Comprehensive and long-term. You got to have assessment. I think we talked about that a little bit. To make these programs work, you got to try to target those resources on the offenders that can really focus in on them. So we're spending a lot of attention in Washington on developing juvenile adult assessment tools. Look, state and local efforts, won't talk about that now. Maybe we can talk about that some in question. How you get programs accountable so that just like Starbucks, you maintain quality control of those programs. Got to worry about that. Starbucks has to worry about that. We got to worry about that if we're going to fund those programs, or else there's evidence that they erode if you don't maintain that. That's a management deal. And then not everything is known. So while we told our legislature we think there are some clear things that work, there's only a limited amount of research on what works and doesn't. So just like any business firm, we recommended research and development funds should be part of the mix. So there's our report. You can get it off the, it looks like a plain old government report. I've been doing this stuff for 31 years, so I know how to write plain old government reports. They look this way. I'm not ready to retire yet, so I'll continue to write plain old government reports. If I were, I had a temptation to do this, so I'm going to have a little PowerPoint fund here. Karen's going to get mad at me. There's another report. It's called Consumer Reports. This was their annual 2005 car issue, annual auto issue, exclusive reliability ratings, more than 1,100 cars and so on. Let's just say what this report really is. Let's change that title. Annual criminal justice issue, exclusive ratings over 200 crime-related programs and policies. We'll get that car out of there. The best 2007 crime policies to adopt. There's the capital of Olympia, state of Washington. Unbiased ratings, 222 programs. Best and worst programs don't get ripped off. Save taxpayers' dollars. And best programs that reduce crime and safety and taxpayers' money. That's basically what we presented to our legislature. A consumer reports on what works and what doesn't, and how you can change your portfolio and lower crime rates, we think, and save taxpayers money. The legislature took that, by the way, this is what the report looks like because I'm not ready to retire yet, so I made it like that. But it's the same kind of a thing. It's the same thing that the legislature asked us to do, and we were able to implement that program. And the legislature has taken big steps to implement that portfolio, so the real experiment now in Washington is, can we deliver the goods to the taxpayers in the state of Washington? Thanks very much.
Okay. If any of you have to leave early, please complete your evaluations for us and give them to our staff on your way out. as always, we want to give state legislators and agency administrators a chance to ask questions of our speakers. We'll have a couple for Steve now, and then we'll open it up to either Larry or Steve. And you need to speak into the mic, because we're audio taping this for legislators who commute long distances to the Capitol. Yes.
Steve, in your report, does it talk about foster children coming out of the system and how many are, because I know that you've done some comprehensive changes in your foster care and scholarships for college, for higher education, et cetera, and I think also, if I'm not getting states mixed up, I think you are continuing to allow kids to stay in their foster homes after they age out at 18 if they go to higher education. Was that shown in your study, and therefore that's what the result was?
No, those are two things that are underway in the state of Washington, and the legislature's asked us to evaluate those, but they're not part of this. That is, okay. I don't have evidence yet that either of those things relate to crime rates. Logically, they might, but I need evidence. And so the legislature has done both of the things that you mentioned in the foster care system, and it's asked the Institute to evaluate whether those things affect a bunch of outcomes, employment outcomes primarily, but also crime outcomes, and we're doing those evaluations now. If those look to be effective, I don't know if they will be. A lot of times you do things that aren't effective, but if they are effective, they would be in a subsequent version, the 2008.
So stay tuned.
2009
right?
Version of the Consumer Reports or something like that. But that's the process that you would want. I mean, if you're Howard Schultz, the president of Starbucks, he's all the time looking for new ways to make money for stockholders. I'm a stockholder of Starbucks, and so I like it that Howie is out there worrying about how to make me more money. And so that's why we encourage our legislature to be thinking about new ways that might also reduce crime rates, and it's done that in the foster care system, in part for crime reasons, in part for earnings and economic reasons, and then ask for an evaluation of those programs so that we can tell whether it should be part of the portfolio in the future.
Thank you.